Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Beginners to stage, beginners to stage.
How many times have I said not to touch the cross?
Hello everyone, and welcome to this week's Backstage at Cry Havoc episode. I am your host, Lori Ann Davis, she, her, and today we're going to be talking to the writers, or some of the writers, two of the writers of Cry Havoc, ask questions later. They are David K. Barnes and Sarah Shackett. And please, can I ask you to introduce yourselves with your pronouns and just tell us a little bit about yourself and the involvement in the show. David, please go first.
Hello, I'm David. I'm a he, him, and I'm the creator of Cry Havoc. And I asked Sarah to write a script for me, and she did. And that's worked out remarkably well.
Hello, I am Sarah Shackett, she, her. I do what David tells me to do, which is mostly write scripts.
Oh, that's excellent news. So, I think maybe a good place to start, let's orient ourselves within the story and which episodes are yours, Sarah. So you wrote The Producers and Rome Open City. So those are episodes 13 and 14 of Cry Havoc, Ask Questions Later. They have, if all's gone to plan with the schedule, just released when this episode's coming out to patrons.
Outstanding.
Do you want to summarize what happened? Or I have written a tiny little summary. Has it been too long since you wrote them?
I can do quick summaries. That might be comical because it has been a minute since I looked at the scripts. So The Producers is when Octavia finally gets to put on a play and it goes exactly to plan and nothing goes wrong and everything is fine.
You've remembered that perfectly, yes.
Yeah.
And then Rome Open City is also another Octavia-heavy episode when she and Charmian get to spend a day wandering around Rome and having kind of a date, which is exciting.
Which also goes perfectly.
It's incredibly well.
Yeah.
It's two episodes of people having a great time.
Yeah.
And nothing going wrong at all.
What I love so much about this series is how there's no conflict.
Yeah. We stamped that out very early on. This is about pure down-the-line administration, going properly, mm-hmm. people respecting each other, getting on with each other. It's 20 episodes of pure harmony. And that's what the public wants.
That actually sounds really calming. And I feel like I would listen to that for at least a couple of episodes.
The ASMR version of the show.
Oh, yes.
Oh, something that we missed out there that I think is very important is that Lepidus plays the monster in episode 13. That's something I thought was important enough to put in my notes.
Incredibly important. Thank you.
Yes.
Sarah, what's your experience writing in a writer's room?
Oh, gosh.
Is this the first time you've done it, or have you done it quite a lot?
Not the first time, because I think Cry Havoc, can't imagine why, was organized very similar to Wooden Overcoat season 4, where I was brought in and there was an outline that already existed and kind of an idea for what needed to happen in those particular episodes, but kind of how we got there was the work that, in this case, myself, the wonderful Robert Ballantyne, and David and Amani all sort of got together on a Zoom and talked about a block of 4 episodes and kind of what needed to happen in that discrete chunk of the story. And, I mean, writing in a room is just a joy because you're surrounded by smart people who say funny things. And occasionally you contribute too, but it's great. So it was not my first time, but a wonderful, wonderful experience with a very talented room.
I've really enjoyed Sarah's work on All 359. I've worked with her on a series Unseen, of course, on Wooden Overcoats. And I just like, Sarah does very, very good dialogue. She's very good to plot things with and discuss things. And just sort of sit down and talk about a story and go into in excruciating detail. And she just goes, yeah, all right then. It's just a very good, easy working relationship. And I've always loved Sarah's writing. And I also knew that Sarah already had a great interest in ancient Rome and the classics.
That's right.
So that's very helpful. That's very handy.
He knew I was a nerd.
Yeah.
Good knowledge to have.
Did you do your own research on sort of ancient Roman medical customs? Because I was looking through the research that Dr. Southern did for us, and I can't find anything about medicine. I think you may have just done that yourself.
Yeah, no, I went back to Pliny's Natural History, which is a wild read, very, very dense. The man loved cabbage. I don't really know what to say. It's one of those things of, like, you have to skim it for details, because if I, like, tried to really get in there and get a firm grasp of how Romans thought about medicine, that's a semester course worth of work that I did not do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But definitely went Wikipedia diving and went to a couple primary sources for things to steal from, for sure.
So the sources are, because they're still, like, you know, beginnings of recorded history and the beginnings of trying to, like, you know, write encyclopedias that nobody's really done it before. So it's just people grabbing what they've seen and observed and all the knowledge and just writing it down. And most of the time there's very little veracity to it. It's just, I've heard that this works.
Yeah.
Write it down. We'll try it. I've not read Pliny. I've read Herodotus of the ancient Greeks.
The king.
Who is the very first historian, certainly at least in the West, the first sort of ancient Greek who wrote a history of things, which is essentially, you know, he did an entire sort of book on Egypt, which is just going to Egypt and asking the locals, can you give me interesting stuff? And they give him stories about giant ants in the desert that find gold for people. And he goes, yeah, all right, that sounds plausible, just writes it down. Because this is how history works, and this is how medicine works. It's still a great deal of it's about observation, it's about belief in the gods, it's about sort of tempers and things, and it's just something it's really fun to put in, especially if you're trying to undermine characters who are meant to be incredibly powerful. The best thing you could do is make them ill, give them a cold or give them a fever, give them something that brings them down, because everyone, no matter how powerful they are, ultimately is sort of subservient to their doctor. It's the one person who can come in and tell them what to do, and so that's fun. That's the sort of comedy subplot, an episode that's going to a lot of other themes about sort of romance, sexuality, and class divide as well.
Yes.
It's a comedy show, but there's serious things in it too.
The medicine being such straight, pure, undiluted comedy lets you balance with the more serious stuff that happens in the other plot line.
Yeah.
And lets you get away with it. If you're going to sort of deal with potentially unreachable chasms of socioeconomic experience, then for God's sake, in the middle, have a couple people who don't like each other be quarantined together.
Have an onion suppository.
Yes. Yeah.
Suppositories all the way.
I'd like to do, because this was still, you know, within the throes of COVID lockdown, said, I want a quarantine episode. Guys and Mark are stuck together.
I mean, it's the best. Two people in a room who don't like each other, who have to stay in the room and they're talking. It's,
yeah.
Come on.
So am I to understand then that the things that Dr. Demetrius prescribes were actual things that have been written down as tried and tested remedies in ancient Rome?
I don't know about tried and tested. I think, as David was saying, especially with Pliny, he's just writing down kind of hearsay and also his own experience. And more recommendations than you think involve parts of dragons, so like I would find that very hard to replicate its veracity, but all of the medical recommendations were stuff that I found in the sources. I didn't even try to make anything up, because nothing that I thought about would be as bonkers as the actual Roman ideas about the human body and how to make it better.
I just can't get past the onion suppository and just thinking, please, please tell me a lot of layers were taken off.
I mean, logistically, you think, right?
We don't have to go into it graphically, but oh, sweet Lord.
It's really interesting thinking about how we're different from the Romans, just sort of how, for better and for worse, more connected they are with like the stuff in nature. A lot of our experience of medicine is, you know, you take a pill or there's a cough syrup. Like, they are actually having to make this from, like, the stuff they find in their garden, or in some cases, the spiders they find in their garden, and are just making it up as they go.
Pretty grim.
You know?
Was your interest in Rome, was it, like, academic? Had you studied it? Or was it just, like, this is a period of time that fascinates you, so you just happen to know a lot about it?
I did, in college, study it a little bit. I was a classics major in addition to studying film, and was very bad at Latin, and was mostly interested in the end of the Roman Empire and how it all fell apart. Mm. Where I studied was kind of on the border of the Roman Empire in the early medieval period. But I think Rome is fascinating. I've always been interested in it. And I would say that I have like a good, solid hobbyist understanding. And the late Republican period is one that we have such a vivid understanding of, mostly because Cicero's a gossip.
Not the first time he's come up in these episodes.
Yeah.
What a narc.
If you did the combo of, you know, classics and film, did you end up spending a bit of time at college watching all the old classic sword and sandal movies?
Oh, yeah. Lot of peplum. A lot of Italian peplum films. And a lot of, like, I don't want to say bad, but a lot of films and TV shows that were eager to cash in on Gladiator, is how I'll put that.
Yes.
HBO's Rome is brilliant, though. We'll hear no slander against it.
Will you not?
There should be more penises on the doors for all of the shops. That's the only thing that's inaccurate, is that there were penises everywhere.
So I want to take us back to, kind of related to, the lack of penises being everywhere.
She says this once an episode.
My
incredible segue.
Thank you. My knowledge of ancient Rome is being developed through this series, basically. Mm-hmm. The image I have of it in my head is that it is very, like, free love, like, sex isn't a taboo, and that is definitely something that this series leans into, I'd say. How accurate is that? And specifically around sexuality, in the sense of, would a woman with a woman have been accepted, do we think? Would it have been different for two women, two men? What do you know about that?
I think academics are still sort of some loggerheads as to whether sort of queer relationships is something which was going on, acceptable, socially acceptable, whatever.
And even to the extent that we can call them queer relationships, because Roman's understanding of their own sexuality is wildly different from ours.
Yes, I've read they don't really have words for sort of sexualities and etc.
They don't.
They have words to describe different sort of sexual positions, and without going to too much detail on what might be a PG certificate podcast, the position that one assumes during these activities puts you into a certain bracket in how you're viewed.
There's status associated, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
It's one of those sorts of things where gay sex and gay relationships were almost certainly going on quite a bit, but they would not be something you discuss publicly, but you sort of know they were happening.
Right.
And if you're the sort of the dominant partner in such an arrangement, then you're fine, but if you deign to be the junior partner in such a relationship, then you are viewed very badly and jokes made about you. So it's a very hypocritical sort of standpoint.
Am I misinterpreting that? Is that sounds like it could be specific to men?
That would be men.
Yes, because the writers did not care about women, and so they didn't write down a lot, which gets to Octavia and Charmian, is that we just don't have a lot in the sources about what we would consider lesbian relationships. And the writers seem very confused by them when they are mentioned.
Yes, we should definitely state that when we say the writers, I mean the ancient writers, as opposed to the other writers on this series.
Yes.
Who may be confused, I don't know. But I think it's true, like in ancient Greek texts, we know of the poetry of Sappho, but even that is of small fragments here and there. For ancient Roman women, I think the one suspects that it's viewed with a sort of, well, that shouldn't be happening, but it's okay if it does because it barely matters, they're only women, which is the view that a lot of the sort of Roman men would have likely had. For the purpose of this series, you sort of have to make a decision as to, yes, to what extent is it, how is sexuality viewed here? For this show, I thought quite early on I wanted to be honest, make the executive decision that queer relationships are going on and nobody really cares much about it, because it makes it for a much sort of a certainly happier show in some ways. But it's also how Wood and Overcoats to some extent went, where my sort of view there was most characters are probably bisexual unless said otherwise, and that sex was probably going on all over the place off camera, off whatever, but we don't necessarily focus on it. Here, I think there are references to sort of various characters being bisexual. Cleopatra certainly is. I think Mark Antony stated in the episodes. And so when Charmian and Octavia are together, the reason why they have to stay secret is not because they're both women in a romantic relationship. It's purely because they are on opposite teams in this big political sort of war going on between Egypt and Rome. They're not allowed to sort of know each other because of all the politics and all the other things going on. There might even be something of a class issue there as well, of, you know, sort of the rich woman and the sort of servant character. But certainly the fact that they're both women. In episode one of the series, there was reference to Octavia having spent the night with a serving girl, and Gaius is annoyed about it, but not because it's a lesbian sexual encounter. It's either because he is just a bit sniffy about people having sex at all, or it's because his sister is sleeping with a servant, and that's the issue. But I wanted to make it quite certain early on in episode one that gay relationships or lesbian relationships or any sort of queer relationship in this series was permissible, and, you know, people wouldn't criticise you for it. There'll be plenty of other reasons to be criticised in this series, but that won't be one of them, because it opened up the storytelling, and I think it just, it's one of the ways in which I sort of thought we'd try to make this Roman world feel a bit closer to our own. This is a sort of fiction series. This is a series set in ancient Rome as opposed to a series about ancient Rome.
And that's how you have to approach it, because a lot of what we know about Roman sexuality, if you consider them and try to take them on their face, like it brings up a lot of stuff that we now would have a moral quandaries with, in terms of, you know, we're actually problematizing sexual relationships between people of different classes, whereas in actual fact, you know, upper class elite Romans had enslaved people and had sexual relationships with people of lower classes, and that was fine, and there were no protections for those people, which is not great. So it's really freeing as a writer to sort of think about people with a relationship to sex that is closer to our own, but in this sort of alien setting where queer relationships are just not problematic on the face of them being queer relationships. and we can then explore, and, you know, hopefully episode 14 does explore, you know, all of the roadblocks that might exist for Octavia and Charmian, but the fact that they are both women is not one of them.
Mm. It's one of those things where, you know, we all have certain views of ancient Rome, most of it coming from the films and TV series, that there's sex going on everywhere, but also I think we'd naturally assume, oh, there was probably a lot of queer relationships going on, some sex and romance. It probably was. It's ancient world, it's ancient Italy and ancient Greece, it probably was going on. And you can kind of lean into that and go, you know, we are going to take that and make that thing. Because it's also, from a sort of even a dramatist point of view, we are meant to enjoy, say, for instance, Mark Antony, we are meant to enjoy Gaius as sort of protagonist, even if we don't subscribe to some of their actions, especially as the series goes on. You know, we don't aspire to be these people, but we do need to kind of enjoy being in their presence. If Gaius was verently homophobic, we're not going to be on board with that character at all. We will not want that character in our series.
Like, they're patriarchal, but in the way that our society is, not the sort of incredibly strict and hyperactive form of patriarchy that Roman men practiced, because that would be a lot.
Yes, it's an incredibly patriarchal society. And even in our series, though all the positions of power are occupied by men in politics, which is also another reason why sort of they find Cleopatra quite a startling figure to be working as sort of a woman in power. Again, references, you know, derogatory references to women for being women are, I think, maybe kept to a fair minimum in this. Again, Gaius, his criticism of Octavia running a theatre company isn't, oh, you're a woman trying to write and put on plays in a theatre. It's, you're my sister, and it looks incredibly bad for me as a politician that my sister's involved in theatre and doing all this. And so I really enjoy all those scenes of Octavia and Charmian in episode 14 and 13, indeed, where they're having a furtive meeting in a cuddle in a cupboard.
That's right.
He's sort of all loved up and, ooh, we're together now. We can run around and be a bit naughty, etc. But again, it's because it's the same way that a couple of people in a theatre company would be feeling a bit naughty. It's not, ooh, look, we're two women and we're lesbians. And it's, oh, we've got a secret and nobody else knows. And that's something that an audience can really buy into and have fun with. And I think it's the sort of the fine line of making this feel like quite a sort of accessible playground while still feeling a bit like ancient Rome. And I think you do end up leaning into the films. Though I think one sort of, I think, notable thing that is often done in the films and TV series, which I don't think we do at all, is there was a habit of the rush to kind of depict ancient Rome as this sort of hedonistic, awful sort of society that usually is defeated by Christianity. You will often have villains who are usually depicted or sort of coded as being gay. Like things like 1950s, you got the robe with the villain is Caligula. Caligula is often depicted as being queer coded, usually against a very sort of, you know, straight down the line, square jawed American Roman. Deviant sexuality, as they would sort of put it, is a way of coding someone as a villain, which is fortunately very much falling out of favour. Where in an ancient Roman film, if somebody seems a bit gay, oh, they're probably a villain. Whereas,
I mean, that goes back to the Roman sources too. Suetonius thought all of the bad emperors were gay.
It is one of those things, in ancient biography, an easy way of trying to lambast somebody or say that they were a bad Roman or a bad politician is you say, oh, and they were having sex with lots of boys, or they were doing this, or they were very effeminate, or etc. And some of these very negative assessments of particular figures have even stayed in with modern scholars. There's the famous Emperor Elagabalus, much, much later in the Severan Dynasty, a figure I'd love to write about at some stage because it was absolutely fascinating. It was essentially a teenager who was made emperor, certainly probably not very well suited to it, but was a kind of a priest of a foreign god. And was, you know, distinctly sort of, from sources, quite a sort of a feminine individual. Some sources or some sort of modern assessments would say they might have even been transgender. And the sources, on the whole, say, oh, look at this awful person because all these reasons. And even now, some modern biographies you'll get in your library will say the worst Roman emperor of all. And it's very difficult to find reasons as to why they would be the worst emperor of all. It's just, oh, they seemed a bit excessive. And a bit excessive is coded as a bit queer. And it's a very, sort of negative attitude. That runs straight from those ancient sources to now. So to be able to do a series where you go, right, f*** all that.
Yeah.
No. Let's have openly queer characters in our series, and they're celebrated, and they're great, and we can love them. Fantastic. Let's crack on and find various other things to do, because there's always an element in ancient sort of texts and even sort of modern culture and those films which you just go, I wish that wasn't there. And then I'm doing my own one. F*** it. I don't want that. Sorry, I'm not allowed to swear.
That's all right. I've already decided we're beeping the first one. It was necessary.
Yeah, but, you know, that's something I go, I don't want any of that in my show. This is my version of Rome. And I talk to all the writers and I go, yeah, I agree. And I go, brilliant, let's have fun. And there are lots of other reasons to sort of delve into and the darkness of this society, which yes. is definitely there. But a darkness which is still prevalent in our society now, even sort of going forward. We just want people to sort of have fun when doing the show as much as listening to it.
Yeah. And I mean, the drama is only interesting when, you know, transposing characters into a historical setting reflects something back about ourselves and our own lives,
yes.
right? Like, there is a point at which thinking about the history becomes counterproductive to the project that we're embarked on. And it's incredibly useful to be steeped in sources and sort of have an understanding of the context in which you are writing about. But it's also, there's a certain point where you have to turn that part of your brain off. And then it's incredibly freeing to go, okay, I have this wonderful stage setting for these characters. Let's watch them run around in closets in the back of this temple because they're madly in love.
What I particularly love in Sarah's episode 14 is that I think the note is I wanted them to have a good day together, but for some cracks in the relationship to show from their opposite perspectives and different sort of views on life and class, and of course the fact that Charmian is still working for Cleopatra, and that's in there, and that I think is very exciting, and I think it gives an extra frisson to their relationship, and I really loved those scenes.
Me too, and I think what shines through it, and this sounds like it should be obvious, but they obviously like each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there are issues and differences, but they obviously like each other, and that's really nice to see, because I know, like, in a lot of rom-coms you think, why are you you don't like each other, what's happening?
Yeah,
but it was an absolute joy to write those scenes, because I, you know, in thinking about this version of Octavia and this version of Charmian, they are incredibly complementary. They could conquer the world together, and you know, the tragedy is that one of them was born in Rome and one of them was born in Egypt, and so having a relationship is complicated, and it's wonderful to explore the ways in which it is, but also, you know, what makes it a comedy and what makes it safe until potentially it isn't, is that they do like each other and that they do get on and they are good for each other.
Mm. Yeah, that's one of the hypocrisies that we kind of do keep in this series, is that, you know, somebody like, you know, Julius Caesar would have had a relationship with Cleopatra, and so the idea of heads of state of different nations, you know, sort of enjoying each other's company, shall we say, is kind of, oh, that's just an expected thing. But if it was somebody else of a high status with somebody of lower class, a class would have been the big thing. The fact that Octavia is a elite woman and she would have been carrying on with what essentially is a servant, let alone a Cleopatra's sort of right-hand spy. That is one of the things that would be very much seen against it. That's what that would be the reason why other male characters in this would sort of take a very dim view. And that is very much an hypocrisy within sort of the Roman state class generally. The hypocrisy surrounding class is something which I really like exploring and writing generally. That's one of the areas I really did want to look at throughout this series. If this is a kind of reflection of modern society, it's that people at the top of society are seemingly allowed to get away with a lot of things and that they then censure other people for, who sort of in lower classes. And that has gone on for thousands of years and will sadly go on probably for a few thousand.
No, it was like weirdly cathartic to write, this is a term in the States, but to write Octavia as kind of like a limousine liberal.
Champagne socialist?
Yeah, champagne socialist is a similar...
Champagne socialist, there you go. And explore the ways in which class kind of blinkers or is in the background until it isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially for someone of Octavia's status. That was such a joy to do and to write. So thank you for giving me those episodes again.
Well, it was nice to do the sort of fun contrast of the sort of slightly slower paced character focused one after the, oh, and could you also write a farce? Could you please do
with
like,
a montage?
Yeah. Yeah.
Could, which
could,
I loved.
Could you do a farce episode just about putting on a play and it goes wrong? And he went, yeah.
Sure, that's fine.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm going to have to wrap us there, which I'm so sad about. This was fantastic and really interesting. Thank you for expanding my knowledge even further on Rome. I look forward to being an expert by the end of these.
Excellent.
And Sarah, would you like to plug anything?
I mean, sure. I'm not on Twitter anymore, so don't go there. It's a bad place. But you can listen to other things that I've written if you like. These episodes that I wrote of Cry Havoc, I wrote on Wolf 359, a fabulous series called Unseen that David wrote an episode of that's very funny. And so I've written stuff. You can find me. My name's weird. Just Google me.
On that, thank you everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed, and I'll see you on the next one. I'm not sure what it is off the top of my head, but would you like to say goodbye, Sarah and David?
Bye-bye.
Thank you all so much.
Bye. Backstage at Cry Havoc is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike 4.0 International License. It is directed by Amani Zardot, produced by Laurie Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner. This episode was edited by Laurie Ann Davis and Catherine Vernella. Thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.